Mr. Blazy.
Yo!
Can you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear.
Oh my goodness, what is that call happening?
Who's calling who?
It's probably me calling you. Can you just decline it?
I don't see it though.
It's gone.
It's whatever. Gone. It's gone, that's all we care about.
Making turkey chili and watching Big Daddy. As you do on a Saturday night.
As one does, I will disregard the Big Daddy because we get too off track because I love Big Daddy like a mother loves a child. I will comment on though the chili. This is big in the news with J.R. Smith literally throwing a bowl of soup at an assistant coach and getting suspended and losing actual real dollars and cents because he was suspended. So the question is. Is chili a soup?
I want to say yes, but at the same time, I get the argument for why it's not.
Okay, here's what you have to know, though. If you're going to be asked the question, is chili a soup? Or, something weird I've heard today, is cereal a soup?
Whoa, that's really
listen, kind of... it's been said. If you're going to say that either of those two things are not a soup, you need to have something other than, no, cereal's not a soup, it's cereal. Or okay, chili's not a soup, it's chili. You gotta have something better than that to convince me.
Can I speak to the cereal point?
Yes.
Okay, so here's clearly why it's not. Okay?
Yeah.
Why it's clearly not is because cereal itself is not. Cereal and milk makes it a soup-like substance. So the fact that it needs two things to be put combined to make it a soup-ish kind of thing, it's not a soup, inherently.
Okay.
Do you agree with that statement?
That's a fair point. Now, I'm going to read you the Wikipedia definition of soup.
Okay.
Soup is a primary liquid food generally served warm or hot, but may be served cold. It is combining ingredients such as meat, vegetables, stock, juice, water, or other liquids.
Okay.
That's all
still
it is.
Still not a soup. Cereal itself is not a soup. Cereal and milk might be.
So explain to me why cereal is... Well, okay.
Because cereal itself is not wet.
Well, sure. Okay, a bowl of cereal. Explain to me why a bowl of cereal is not soup.
Because two separate entities being combined.
Yes, but that's the very essence of soup. Soup is combining things that you might not normally combine into one beautiful medley.
Oh, God, I just so disagree with you, but at the same time, I can't formulate an argument that makes sense.
Tell me why cereal is not soup.
It's just not.
No, see, you gotta be better. That's the one rule. You gotta be better than...
It wasn't intended. Cereal wasn't necessarily like, sure, cereal and milk is the most common way to eat cereal, but you can just eat cereal as itself and nobody will call you weird.
Well, sure, you can eat chicken without chicken noodles and carrots.
God,
gotta be better. Gotta convince. So here's what I've heard today.
There's no cooking that happens.
Ah, okay, so it's the cooking.
It's not just throwing, it's the marrying together of flavors to create something new.
Listen, do you know how many different types of Lucky Charms marshmallows there are? Tell me that's not marrying together flavors and beautiful, beautiful marshmallows. So here's what I've heard today against cereal. I've heard this against cereal. I've heard cereal is cold. But i.e. gazpacho.
Gazpacho's cold.
Yeah, can we talk about gazpacho? So, let's move on to, most soups are vegetable or meat or broth-based soup. So,
in some form, yes.
Yeah, so, cereal is milk-based. That couldn't be a soup.
I mean, that's a colloid.
Can I get some chowder out here? Can I get some chowder?
I do. Good point. Chowder's not milk, though. It's heavy cream.
Well, it's still a dairy or cream-based soup. I mean, that's what we're talking about here. Can I get some chowder? Can I get some love for the chowder?
Yeah, you can, because I make a really good chowder.
You make a mean chowder, I think.
I do.
Would you say that's one of your top three dishes that you make?
No, but it's in the top 10. It's in the top 10.
Okay.
Top three are probably two Mexican dishes and one Italian.
Okay.
fight you on this. That cereal is just not. Chili?
You gotta do better, man.
If we're really debating that cereal isn't, why are we even talking about chili? Like, if we're debating that cereal could be soup, then clearly chili. Let's not even talk chili. Am I wrong? I guess.
I mean, chili is a weird thing, but I would say that chili is a soup.
Yeah, I mean, what... On every menu that's ever existed, what is chili under?
Always under the soups. A cup of soup, a cup of chili.
Soup du jour, maybe, sometimes.
Yeah, it's...
But what does du jour actually mean?
That's I don't know. What is du jour? These are things that we don't know.
What is life? These are the questions.
All right, so I'm gonna find soup du jour online, and we're going to see what soup du jour means. So soup...
Soup of the day.
Soup du jour does, in fact, mean soup of the day. It is a French word. It is a French saying. Excuse me.
Clearly. It's one of those things where it's a restaurant trying to make itself seem fancy.
Yes. All right, so we planned on talking this entire time about soups, right? That's what we called each other for?
This is the soup pod.
Soup pod.
But on another note, this is something you can cut out, is... Or even keep it in. This is my official announcement of, after a long layoff of about 4 to 5 months, I have returned.
Yes.
I'm back.
You're back.
Full. There's going to be plenty of movie reviews, music reviews, reviews of cereal being a soup, whatever you want. Yankee baseball?
Sure.
Syracuse basketball? No, we're not going to talk
about that. Syracuse basketball is all but finished.
We should be tanking for a draft pick, let's be real.
Yeah. Well, we already have our draft pick. We already have our draft pick next year.
Darius Bassley?
And Jalen.
Oh, I'm so happy. All right.
I digress. Back,
but yes, this is my official announcement that I have returned.
Okay, good. I was hoping that you were going to say, I don't know, like maybe you were coming out of the closet, like if you were making an announcement like that. I wasn't sure where you were going with that.
Nope, but, very in the closet.
Very, very still.
By very saying, much still in the closet.
By saying that you are in the closet or anyone is in the closet.
It's inherently coming out of the closet.
Does that mean, though, that you are... about or that you may in the future at some point come out of the closet? Or is in the closet mean just either you are a gay person or you are a straight person?
We'll just leave it up to interpretation.
I don't know. See, we're ignorant people. We don't know the I don't know the answer to that.
No, we don't have the experience in figuring that out.
I don't know. I'll ask around. I'll Google. Google knows basically everything, so
Google, you could just ask Google anything and it'll let you know what the real answer is. Let's be real about that. Google knows more than everybody in the world combined.
Basically. All right, so...
Well, actually, I think it knows just about that.
Yeah, I think it is basically what everyone knows. So we decided to call each other about the baseball team in New York, not the New York Mets, the real baseball team,
We don't like sadness.
Yeah, we don't like sadness and despair, so we're just going to go ahead with the World Series rings and stuff, so we're just... We're going to go with the Bronx Bombers, the Pinstripes, the team with legacy, the team with wins, the team with players, and it's time. I mean, I remember you called me the other day, and you asked me on February 12th. We hadn't spoken in at least a couple of weeks. You said...
because, and I quote, you are big time now.
Well, yeah, since I've moved downstate, we haven't been speaking as much, and... You know, we talked for a few minutes, and you had asked me, after our talk was over, and after you asked me about my job, you said, hey, do you know what tomorrow is? And I stuttered for a millisecond, and then I said, oh, it's pitchers and catchers report to camp tomorrow.
Yep.
And I was so happy and so upset at the same time that both of us knew that pitchers and catchers were reporting to camp tomorrow, and it made me feel so happy and so sad at the same time.
I mean, it's kind of a sad existence, but the fact that we both not only know that when pitchers and catchers report, but get actively excited for it. An
yes.
event that is literally just people showing up and reporting for work. They don't even, nothing happens.
No, nothing.
They don't even do a workout on that day. They're just there.
They're just and a part of it.
I think what it is that it symbolizes that the season is upon us and that good weather is around the corner. And as they say, as cliche it is, hope springs eternal. It's so true. The hopefulness of the season, even the worst team, even the Marlins have stuff to be excited about. Like, it's just the spring training. It's just such a nice time where every team is still living in fantasy land. Like, everything's going to go perfect. and we're going to have a great season, and we're going to win everything.
Wow. That was really strong. That was a really strong endorsement. Well, listen.
That's how I feel about spring training is the only thing. Like, preseason football is whatever. Preseason basketball, I mean, summer league, I guess. But spring training is just, like, the weather's getting better, and, like, we're about to go through the long journey, and anything can happen. Nobody really knows. Stars can come out of anywhere. I mean, Aaron Judge last year was competing for a spot on the roster.
Right, so that's really where I'd like to start, is where we were a year ago today. So a year ago today, what were some of the things that we were looking at in camp?
Well, the big battle was Aaron Hicks versus Aaron Judge for right field.
Who
we had three starters. Luis Severino wasn't a lock to make the team.
No, which is befuddling to think about now.
We were talking about Gleyber Torres never playing a game above AA, being our shortstop filling in for the injured Gregorius.
Mm-hmm.
Chase Hadley was still bad. That's nothing new. We all thought Greg Bird was going to have a 40 home run season.
Because in spring training, especially towards the end of it, he hit the snot out of the ball. He was batting over 400, had a bunch of RBIs, had a bunch of dingers.
Eight dingers, to be precise.
And we thought Greg Bird, I mean, listen, the jury's still out of Greg Bird, but at the time we thought that Greg Bird was maybe going to be one of our best two hitters, like, probably.
Him and Gary. That was what was the reasonable expectations, that him and Gary. And it was kind of hopeful, but at the same time, as a smart baseball fan, both of us knew, we didn't expect much from last year. If we had continued the streak of not being a losing team and developed our young players... Like, if you told me that in February last year, I would have been happy if that's how the season turned out.
Well, that's true. I mean, a lot of people have been fixating on the fact that the Yankees have not had, like you mentioned, that losing season, that way to...
Since 92, 93?
Right, those rebuilding, like, losing seasons that, they're stockpiling, draft picks and they're stockpiling prospects. Like, we haven't had that. And what I think is interesting is that last year... Or not last year, excuse me. When we made those trades for when we took out Aroldis Chapman and we traded away Andrew Miller, we got a bunch of these prospects. And you could say that, those trades in the short term, they lost us the season. But in the long term, we got the prospects and we have a chance now. But
exactly.
Those guys, they can say that. But those guys that we got in those trades, we haven't even seen them yet.
Mm-mm.
Like
Gleyber and Clinton Justice have still not arrived yet. Dylan Tate.
Exactly. Like those guys aren't even here yet, and we're sort of playing with house money and the prospects that we already had originally before those trades even happened. So
I mean, it's wild. Like literally, like what you're getting at, like what you think about is like we made these like trades that everybody thinks that once we made those trades, we had a strong farm system. But as you're saying, it's like haven't even seen the fruits of those labor yet. Already got a perennial all-star in right field, a perennial all-star at catcher, a perennial all-star young ace, Luis Severino. Jordan Montgomery, a solid, like, back-to-mid-rotation starter who could probably just throw 200 innings every year, it seems like, of solid baseball. Clint Frazier has shown well.
Yeah. I mean, when...
We haven't seen Andujar in the bigs yet, even, like, for real. We haven't seen Gleyber yet. We haven't seen Justice. We haven't seen... Florial still a couple years away.
Right.
Like, the pipeline's still moving. Like, there's still, like, we're not even, like, halfway done, and we already ended up with, like, elite players from
yeah.
the farm system.
Yes.
That's a crazy thing to think about.
Yeah, we're really not even halfway. There's no such thing as halfway crooks. We're not even close. And what's going to be interesting is, I think probably a good comparison for where the Yankees are right now is actually where the Boston Celtics in basketball, a little cross-sport comparison here, were at about a year ago when they had the best record in the Eastern Conference. And maybe they weren't going to beat the Cavs in the playoff series, but whatever. Like, they had the best record over an 82-game season.
They were a very, very good team.
Right, they had the best record in the entire Eastern Conference over an 82-game season. Like, that's a thing. And in addition to having that team and that roster, they also had the first pick – or I'm sorry, not the first – they had the first pick in this year's draft, and they had the Brooklyn pick – in the next year's draft, which we're not really sure where that's going to fall yet, but it's not a perfect comparison because baseball and basketball are very different sports, and how picks and prospects are completely different.
Saying.
But it's very similar in that way, where they are the best team, but they also have they have the cavalry still coming. We're still capable to be on the way.
We are that rare mix right now of a team that is ready to win a World Series right now this year and still has a elite farm that just has loaded with talent. Because, I mean, you can look at like what like almost 95% of the time happens. Just look to Boston, right? That's
right.
The team that's ready to win a World Series. They're built to win a World Series. But they have sacrificed their whole farm to get themselves to this point now. Like, the fact that we haven't had to, like, we still made trades. Like, people forget. We traded away Fowler, Mateo, Caprillion. We traded away Guzman. We traded away, who else? Blake Rutherford,
Luke
Harkin. And we still have a top five farm. So, like, the fact that we have stockpiled this incredible depth of young talent is huge. Because you look at even Boston, right? Like you talked about a little bit, probably like a week ago or so. At Boston's rotation, right? The rotation depth. They have one solid guy in the rotation who you know is going to probably be there in Sale. He's also a guy who shows later in the season he wears down. You got Pomeranz has injury issues. Price has injury issues. Eduardo Rodriguez, Stephen Wright. They don't have the depth to make up for injuries in the rotation. They don't have guys who are top prospects who can just come up and pitch right now because they've gone all in. So their window's small. They, like, the next one or two years, they got to win a title or they're going to start declining.
Yeah, they'd have to make changes in two or three years if they
exactly.
don't make it. Yeah.
They push their chips in and they haven't paid off yet. But us, with the way that the Yankees are set up, their payroll is low right now and we have all these elite players who are young and we have still the talent to like make up for injuries in almost any position. Like people get injured and normally they plug in with some guy in AAA who's depth. We got guys, we can plug in elite prospects. So we're kind of set up for almost like just you can't even put a number of years on it.
All right.
Really.
Alright, we're gushing at this point. We're gushing too much and we need to reel it in. Let's reel it in.
I got really excited. I'm sorry. We're in a really good spot.
All right. So here's what
things have changed.
Here's what I want to know from you.
Okay.
Spring training. Mm-hmm. What are not necessarily like what are things that you're looking for in spring training, but what are some things from specific guys that you want to see in the next month or so?
Okay. So we'll start with the position battles, and I put that in quotes that you can't see.
Right. I'll imagine them. Send me a picture.
Second base, right?
Yeah.
Is this personally what I like think that's going
to
happen?
Just stuff that you're looking for. Could be anything.
Okay. I'll start off with prefacing that I don't think Miguel Andujar is going to be on the opening day roster.
Okay.
I think that the trade for Brandon Drury, who, by the way, is a very high upside trade. Like, he's a guy who can be like a core piece with the way that they think the front office thinks about him. And I'm too naive in a lot of baseball stuff to like doubt them. So I think Brandon Drury is going to be a great player for a while, but he's versatile too. So he doesn't necessarily just have to play third base. But I want to see Andujar keep, not necessarily producing exactly like he is, because I don't expect him to hit like 15 home runs in spring training. But the fact that he's like taking it the way he is, he's like, all right, like they brought in another third baseman who they think is going to be like their guy. So I just got to keep showing him like what I can do. So the fact that in all this adversity, he's not playing bad, he's playing better, it's like a really, really good sign that he's the kind of guy who just works really hard to get to where he's got to go. He doesn't just like, oh, I need this attention. He's like, all right, great. Like they want this guy. Like I'm just going to work even harder and show them that they're wrong kind of thing.
Right.
Which is the kind of guy you want. But also at second base, I'm a huge Tyler Wade fan that I'll fight you on.
You're going to have to brawl me. You're going to have to fight me to the death because
that whole small sample size last year was whatever. I want to keep seeing Tyler Wade show how versed, like, just like the kind of player he is. He's already had two bunt base hits this spring. That's kind of
really?
Like, the thing that he can bring to the
table. Is this what we're doing? Is this what we're doing? Are we doing Tyler Wade bunt base hits?
No, but what I'm saying is he brings element to the lineup that's huge. He's the kind of guy who can bat 300. He's got that kind of potential. He can play all over the field and play very good defense. He's very fast and had a stolen base element. I'd rather see him starting second baseman.
Okay.
Terrence is a great little player. Like you've seen, Terrence is about peak Terrence, about his best. He's a guy who you love his ability because he's a great energy guy. Everybody loves him. And you can put him in, he can come off the bench and he's fine. He can play, you can plug him in for like a month or a month and a half and he's not going to kill you. He's a perfect utility man in that sense.
Okay.
Like, you know he's fine coming off the bench, but doesn't offer the kind of upside Wade does. Like, Wade is still, like, Wade was a highly thought of prospect. Like, he's got some stuff to him. He's got a little, he's got some talent. Like what you've seen from Treyas, that's his upside. That's about as best as he can be. Wade can be a above the drag. That's kind of his upside. So he's got more than I don't want to run a huge fan, but you've seen from Taurus this year is a good example of why keeping him down in AAA is such a good idea. Because, I mean, he had a baseball since June, and he looks rusty, am I wrong? Like, what he's, like, he looks rusty, right?
Yeah, he looks pretty rusty from what I've seen so far.
So, I mean, he's going to be our second baseman for the future. Like, he's an absolute stud. Like, future all-star kind of guy. So, I think that sending him down to AAA to get, like, you know, get him back in the swing of things, get him his confidence back up, is going to be huge for him. And I think Tyler Wade just offers the most upside of any guy that you're going to put in the opening day lineup.
So I want to ask you, what, I mean, you know about the intricacies of baseball contracts a little bit more than I do, but is there any benefit to keeping Gleyber Torres down in AAA for, I'm not saying the full year, but a couple of more months in terms of how much team control we can have going forward?
Yes, not even months, actually. 19 days.
19 days, okay.
So the way baseball contracts work is you get 6 years of service time worth of control, and it ends up normally just being 3 years of minimum, league minimum, and then 3 years of arbitration, which is, you know, based on play, basically. So if the Yankees keep him down for 19 more days, they'll end up buying another year of him, basically. So it'll be like 6.5 years of him instead. Because the service time won't go over 6 years by the time the season's over. So,
gotcha.
In essence, if you keep him down for 19 more days, you buy what I think would be his age 28 season for like a relatively cheap price. Like, that's pretty huge when you actually think about it. That's a peak year of him, probably, that you're buying for much less than value. So I don't think the Yankees should ever be a team that does that, because we shouldn't be worried about money. If there's a guy we want to keep, like, we have unlimited money.
True.
I know,
basically,
like, you don't want to spend like ridiculously, but if we want to keep somebody, we can keep them. Like the Cano thing, I'm fine with us not doing that because that was ridiculous. But like, if we really want somebody, we can keep them. So I'm not worried about that. But it just makes so much sense here because he's not even ready. Like, just let him go down and get some more seasoning, get ready. I mean, he's 21 years old. He's going to be 21 all year. He doesn't turn 22 until December. He's younger than us, man. Like, much younger than us.
Like, well, you know, wild. What? I was thinking about this probably at some point last year or 2 years ago. Like, when do you, at our age, when do you actually start to feel old? Like, when are you literally going to start feeling like, wow, these guys are younger than us? So I finally came to the decision of how I'm going to know when I'm just too old to be watching sports. So I was born in 1994. When were you born?
1995. We're about a month apart.
So I think that especially in baseball or possibly in the NBA, when I start to see athletes that are born in the 2000s, then I'd be like, well, this is a good run. It was a good run. I'm about done with this. And, you know, it's been fun here, but I'm done. I'm done now. And I just can't handle people being born in the 2000s. I can't do it.
Yeah, that's wild because they were kids when we were older. And
babies. Absolute babies.
Absolute babies. But I think it's right now, man. Like, right on the precipice.
We're getting close.
Like, the team, like the Yankees that I, like, rapidly follow and love, when they start having, like, players that I root for and love that are younger than me, that's when I'm going to feel old. Which is Gleyber. Like, when Gleyber gets to the bigs, starts producing, I'm going to be like, wow, he's younger than me, and he's playing second base for the New York Yankees.
And I just made my third bowl of clam chowder, so.
Exactly. What am I doing? I think we're kind of getting to that point, but I think you're right. When people are in the 2000s, you start seeing, like, born in, like, 2001, it's like, whoa. I remember 2001.
Yeah, that was a date that I can literally remember.
Yeah, it's like, wow. That's wild. That's what it's going
to
get
weird. All right, one other thing I want to ask you is about the lineup. And we've talked about this a little bit. If you had to project a lineup, and I'm just gonna say a few names that we know are going to be where they are. So Drury, Hicks, Wade, those guys are going to be at the bottom lineup, so let's not even talk about them. Mm-hmm. I think it's pretty clear that Gardy's going to be the leadoff. So yep. You have Judge, Birdie, Stanton, and Gary Sanchez, and if you wanted to throw Didi in there as well. We have all of those guys, the power hitters, the average guys. Where do you want to slot them? How do you want this lineup to go? And tell me where you think it's going to be, and then tell me where you think Booney, our new friend Aaron Boone, is going to put them.
So, as far as we'll start with, so one hole is Gardner, right? Like, we've already shored that up. Like, it's going to happen. But the rest of the lineup, we already know from what Boone has said, the batting second is going to either be Judge or Stanton. Like, we know that.
Either one over the other, in your opinion? Does not matter? I mean, I think Judge...
I would say you just keep judging it.
Yeah, Judge has a little bit better of an OBP from what I've seen, right?
I think he's a better hitter. I think Judge is a really, really, really good baseball player. I just do.
Okay. All right. So you want Gardy and then Judge.
And my lineup, I'll just run it down for you. Gardy, Judge, Gary, Stanton, Bird, Didi, Hicks, Drury, Wade?
Yeah, that's where I'm at,
too. Let me explain it, too. It's because I think that people overrate the shit out of breaking up righties and lefties.
Right, so that's what I wanted to ask you about first, is that a lot of people are talking about, all right, instead of having Judge, Sanchez, and Stanton, three really powerful and, you know, good hitting overall right-handed hitters, you don't want to put a guy who has power in terms of Bird or, well, I guess Didi has power as well, or, you know, just a good solid contact hitter. You don't want to break them up. So why do you think that?
Well, just because I think they're your three best hitters. So you want them to bat more than everybody else, right? Like, I mean, I think Boone might slot Greg Bird in at three to break up Stanton and Judge and put Gary fifth. But, I mean, what righty is going to just neutralize Judge, Stanton, and Sanchez? They're that good. Like, don't overthink this one. You got three elite young hitters. Just throw them in a row.
You want to get those guys as much at-bats as possible.
Exactly.
So you don't
just don't overthink it.
I think what was the number that me and you saw in terms of, and I think you remember this, in terms of whether you're batting in the two spot or in the three spot over the course of a season, how many at bats are you getting differently? I feel like you told me this one time.
I think it can be like at least 27.
Oh wow! I thought it was even more. I thought it was over 50.
It might like you just want your best players to get more plate appearances during the year.
Yeah,
it makes sense.
Don't overthink it.
It's, yeah.
You want Aaron Judge to hit as much as possible. Yes. Yes, that's the case.
Don't be like, oh, we got to break him up because, like, when has there been a righty specialist anymore? Who's a guy who's going to be a right-handed specialist to get him out?
Yeah, if you had a guy like Birdie in late-inning situations and, you know, he was coming up in the eighth or the ninth inning in these big high-pressure situations, the other team would bring in a lefty for that one batter and then they would take him out and put in a righty. So it's really not as big of an advantage as a person may think. I think I'm with you on that, is that, you know, it's not like we're going to have a lefty pitching to Aaron Judge or, you know, Stanton in the eighth or ninth inning anyway.
No.
So
no.
It's overblown. And in the playoffs especially, I don't think it's going to be a big deal.
Also, I mean, you're talking about a lefty neutralizing Greg Bird. Greg Bird hit a huge game-winning postseason home run off the best left-handed relief pitcher in, like, the last 10 years. So I don't think you necessarily have to worry about him being neutralized by lefty.
No, and he was basically the best hitter for the Yankees in the playoffs last year.
He was one of them, yeah. Like, I got to stop gushing. I'll
I know.
Bring it back in. Well,
I know.
Let's focus on negatives. You want me to get...
Not yet. Well, you know what? Negatives. Transition to negatives. Let's talk about our starting rotation. So for a lot of teams, this wouldn't be that bad. I'm just going to list off the guys that are sort of, you know, probably going to be it. We have Tanaka, Severino, who finished second in the Cy Young, I believe. Second or third?
Third
in the Cy.
But behind two guys named Kluber and Sale. I don't know if you've heard of them.
Yeah, I heard of those guys. Chris Sale, the guy who has never beat the Yankees or never even thought about beating the Yankees. So Tanaka, Severino, Sonny Gray in the three spot, Sabathia and Jordan Montgomery in the 4 and 5 spots. Sabathia and Monty, I think, are interesting. I'd like to talk about Monty in a second, but in terms of the top half, Tanaka is a bit of a wild card, and that's more the case of he's had a great year for us, and he's had a pretty average year for us last year. And I'm just not sure which Tanaka we're going to get. And Sonny Gray, I mean, talk about the blues. That guy couldn't get any run support last year. I mean, you were texting about this every single day. He's one of the bottom 4 or 5 guys in run support every single game. And I don't know what it was. And the guys knew it. The guys on the bench knew that they weren't scoring runs for him. And I don't know what it is. You know, maybe after a while it does become a little mental. But I don't know. It's going to be really interesting to see what Sonny Gray can do, because we got him mid-season last year, and he was supposed to be a pretty solid 3-starter. Like, maybe a 2-starter for some teams, but for us, a really solid 3-starter. And he wasn't that last year. I mean, maybe you could point to ERA or some, you know, a little bit more in-depth stat, and, you know, it's probably a little more accurate, but we did not win games with him pitching, and that's just a matter of fact.
Mm-hmm. So we'll start with Sonny, because I mean, Sonny Gray has been an ace in his career, like a legit ace. I really think now he's, like, you know, best case scenario, a good number two. But you're right, we brought him in to be, like they gave up a lot of nice pieces for him. Like, he's supposed to be a big part of the team. And he's got question marks, because it's, he's battled injuries for the last couple of years. I mean, he was healthy all last year, but, I mean, he's a smaller guy. And once you're a smaller pitcher and you start getting injured, there's durability questions. So I think if he's healthy all year, he's like a number two. He's a very, very good pitcher. And as far as the run support from last year, I got to agree with you. I think it started becoming a mental thing, because they knew. It started becoming a thing, like, that Sonny Gray doesn't get run support. And maybe guys were pressing a little bit. It's like, hey, we got to help Sonny out. Like, I mean, he's new here. We're like maybe he thinks we don't like him or something.
I hope not.
But I have high hopes for Sonny Gray, because I can't lie, when like Sonny Gray first came up and stuff, like, I was a huge Sonny Gray fan. Loved watching him pitch, even though he pitched all the way out in Oakland in that terrible, terrible stadium. I'd always love Sonny Gray. Like, he's the kind of guy, like, if I played like the show, I'd immediately make a ridiculous trade from the Yankees to get him. So seeing him actually in pinstripes last year was very big for me. But I think Sonny is actually a really good indicator of kind of like how the whole rotation goes. When you look at the rotation on paper, if you know it's going to be healthy, that's a damn good rotation. But everybody has question marks with health. Sevy, I mean, he's pitched, ended up pitching like 50 more innings last year than he's ever pitched in his career. So it's like, can he hold up for another full season? Tanaka, I mean, I know you get farther removed from it, but like, is that elbow going to hold up still? And again, as you said before, he pitched not great for like all regular season. He had a great postseason, but the whole regular season, I think his ERA was like 4.8, like not great.
Yeah, somewhere in that ballpark. And another thing about Sevy is that, you know, you just mentioned about how he pitched more innings last year than he did in, you know, his entire career. But, you know, a lot of people point to the fact that he's kind of struggled in the postseason a little bit as a reason. Maybe he was a little tired, maybe he was this or that. I think it's maybe a little bit overblown, because I think that, you know, to say that he was fine for the entire season and then those extra few games at the end, like, that's when he actually started to get tired, like, in that moment. Like, that was the jumping off point that he began to get tired and he wasn't effective anymore. I think it's a little overblown, but I think there is something a little bit to that, and we could spare him a little bit. I wanted to talk about a little bit also about the bullpen, which a year and a half ago was the best bullpen in the history of baseball and gave me so many nightmares last year. With Chapman and Betances, I mean, during the postseason, we have guys like that, guys like Chapman and Betances, who are supposed to be shut down 8th and 9th inning guys, and they weren't that. And you saw what Girardi did at the end of the season, where he didn't want to play these guys in those high-pressure situations. He kept bringing in David Robertson. And that's the guy that he trusted, and that's the guy he thought that could get big outs at the end of the games. So I guess my question is, this year, what do you think is going to be the mindset for Chapman and Betances? Like, how do you think they come back from, I don't want to say a bad season, because they weren't bad. I mean, all things considered, they were okay. But for them, it was not what they wanted to be.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a really good question, by the way. Betances is the one that's more interesting to me, because, like, Chapman kind of, like, he made a tangible change in his grip on his fastball, and he saw better results off of that. so you can kind of see like a tangible reason why you can believe that like he's figured it out and gotten back to where he's supposed to be.
Yeah.
But Betances is just like goddamn head case. Like, you just don't, like, he was unusable last year in the postseason. But as you said again, like, he was an all-star game last year. So he's a guy who you can't really give up on just because he had like a month and a half of like the yips, basically. Like, you need, he's a guy who can provide so much value for you. So I think you gotta really keep trending him out there. But I don't think he's actually gonna start a huge role. I don't think he's going to be our eighth inning guy. I don't think he's going to be that guy. I think he's actually going to be like a middle inning reliever until he can prove that he can throw the ball consistently over the strike zone. You know what I'm saying?
I do too. Yeah. No, I'm with you. I do too. And it'll be interesting to see. I'm not sure that Betances, I mean, do you think he's in our long-term plans?
I mean, you only have 2 more years of control of him, and he's already, I think he's, this might blow your mind, but I think he's 30 years old.
Yeah, I'm just looking right now. He's going to turn 30 in about 2 weeks. So he's not young. He's not really on that age curve that most of our guys are on.
No, I really don't think he is. I don't see them resigning him. Because he's going to garner a lot of money. And I don't see the Yankees like allocating that amount of cash to him at that point. I mean, as a 31-year-old reliever, like, relievers, their best years are only behind them, like, big time. Like, I mean, pitchers in general, but, like, especially relivers past 30, like... Like, are you really going to bet, like, a lot of money on a reliever to be great when he's 32, especially a guy who's had problems with that in the past? Like, I mean, I love Dellin. He's a New York kid, but, I mean, I just don't see him past 2019.
I think for some of these other guys, like, I have, you know, the utmost confidence in Robertson. You know, I'm sort of, I guess, similar to Girardi in that way. But Canely, yeah, RIP to Girardi. I'm going to miss him. You know what? Let's talk about Aaron Boone in just one sec. I just want to also mention that I'm excited to see what Canely has this year. You know, he was okay last year during the regular season, but he had some really nice playoff moments. And I'm excited to see what he has. And, you know, I love some of our other guys like Holder and Treve. Like, I think that it could be an above-average bullpen and with an above-average pitching staff and an elite hitting group. I think that's basically all you can ask for.
Yeah, I mean, that's a World Series team you just told me.
Yeah, if those things are what they are.
If things break right, which they never do. But here's again, I'll just bring this up again. We kind of have the prospect currency to plug holes when they show up, which a team like the Red Sox doesn't necessarily have. Like, if they sustain a like big season-ending injury to a huge position, they don't have the prospect currency to kind of just go out there and fill it in with another great player on the trade market.
No, they don't.
They're in trouble.
No, they don't. And I have some Devers hot takes for you that I'm going to save for later. But do you think that there is, let's say, I don't know, midseason or about midseason, the Yankees are either within a few games of the division or a few games ahead in the division, or they're right in the mix. Do you think there's a trade that we could be making midseason?
Yes.
And who do you think it's for?
It's probably going to be for a top-of-the-line starter. And if I had to guess who that would be, that's hard. Because it's kind of hard to see like the trade picture come into focus before the season.
Right, but have to have a guy on a struggling team who is, you know, who they're willing to part ways with, and they just need to go in a different direction. But who is that guy?
Do you want my hot takey answer that like kind of like will be like a moment or no?
All right, let's get. I'll listen to it. Yeah, what do you got?
Chris Archer.
Oh,
because that's a Yankee move in the sense that it's years of control. That's a team that always kind of moves their guys as they start to become expensive. I know he's on like a really team friendly deal right now, but I think there's only 3 years left or so. To get to that point where they got to kind of like start restocking and resetting where their window is to compete. And I think he's the kind of guy that the Yankees like. Like, he's a strikeout machine. He's proven he can do it in the AL East. Like, that's the kind of guy that they're going to be looking for. They're not going to be looking for some mid-rotation starter to help supplement things. They want another impact arm that's going to be able to pitch big games in the postseason. And, I mean, Archer is really one of the only guys who looks like he's going to be out there.
Yeah, I mean, we'll have to see. I mean, it doesn't look like... You know, I don't think a guy like, you know, Clayton Kershaw is going to be out there. I mean, I know that's a guy who we've been looking at, but the Dodgers are not going to be selling off pitchers. That's for sure.
No, they are.
That's for sure.
However, he's going to be a free agent if he opts out.
Yeah, so we'll be on his trail. The Yankees will definitely be looking up.
We'll be talking plenty about Clayton Kershaw.
All right, so you know, we've been going for a little bit here, but I want to at least end this sort of discussion on Aaron Boone.
Oh, boy.
You and I were both, I wouldn't, maybe not fanboys, but we both had a certain deal of respect for Joe Girardi. And I wasn't, you know, crying when he left, but, you know, I think thought he was a good manager for the Yankees, and it takes a lot to do that job. It's sort of like quarterback for the Cowboys or whatever, like shortstop for the Yankees. Like, there's a couple jobs like that where they're, you know, there's a lot of pressure and things. So where do you think Aaron Boone is at this point? I mean, I was a lot more skeptical when we fired Girardi to bring in Boone. I wasn't totally upset that we ousted Girardi in the first place, but the fact that we brought in a guy with no management experience and, you know, the dude's been working on TV for a while, and I know he's a hero here, but I'm not sure. Where are you on Boone?
Well, I have to start with your little explanation of Girardi there. It's the best way to put him. It's like, we liked him and respect him, and he got a bad rep, but were we really sad to see him go? Not really.
No.
Like, it was just kind of like a changing of time, but it was more of like, that just kind of sums up Girardi. Like, he was fine, but he never, like, emotionally connected to you like that. It's just like, oh, well, I guess he's gone. Like, sure. It wasn't like an emotional connection like it was when, like, Joe Torre. Like, that was kind of a sadder thing. And that's kind of what I'm going for, is that Aaron Boone reminds me a weird amount of Joe Torre. He
wow.
kind of looks like Joe Torre. He, like, walks around kind of like Joe Torre. He's kind of, like, really, really good with the media like Joe is. He's a calming presence. He knows how to talk to the guys. I kind of like the Aaron Boone hire a lot, other than the fact that he provided one of the happiest moments of our childhood.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Other than that. I'm very high on him. I like the fact that we're going to get a guy who is a really smart baseball guy. I mean, third generation all-star baseball player. Not just, like, three generations of baseball player. Three generations of all-stars. So,
that's
he
important.
Knows his stuff. He's personable. He's everything you'd want in a manager these days. So I'm really high on him. I mean, we've never seen him manage in a real competitive game yet, but I got high hopes for him.
Yeah, I guess I'm a little less optimistic than you are, but I'm not totally out on him. You know, I think that he signed such a deal with the Yankees that, you know, if anything bad happens or we're starting to see signs of him not doing well or doing what Cashman wants him to do, I think he's just going to be gone.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very team-friendly deal that we can just oust him. You know, I have this thing on my laptop where, fortunately or unfortunately, my laptop saves every single text message that I have ever sent or received. So
wow.
Let that just be a lesson to everybody. If you ever text me, my laptop saves it, and there are receipts. So if you ever say a take or something at all, there are receipts, and I will come back at you. And I just wanted to let you know right now that November 15th, I have last year, me and you texting. Me and your brother Chris, we're texting about Joe Girardi. Friend of the pod, Chris Strain. We're texting about Joe Girardi, and we're texting about Aaron Boone. And I text you, and I say, it wasn't necessarily a good or bad idea to fire Girardi, but let's please not let him go to bring in a guy like Aaron Boone. That would not be smart. And you responded to me with two words. You responded to me with the words, not ideal.
Oh, God.
There are
Wait,
receipts.
Wait, what's the date again?
It looks to be November 16th.
Oh, God.
2017. There are receipts.
Like, almost like 2 weeks. Oh. Well, I was a Hensley Mullins guy. I think that's why.
I was too.
Oh, God.
But
that one hurts. This is a disclaimer to everybody that don't ever cross Weston Blaisdell. He brings the receipts.
I always have receipts. Don't ever forget it.
Man, I guess I was a little bit skeptical of a first-year manager with the kind of crew we have. But the more I've like kind of gotten to know and gotten a little bit more sense, it kind of makes sense that you kind of are changing faces and changing over the team as a whole. You kind of need just like a new voice and a new leader in the clubhouse.
Yeah, and that's
I think
not
having a guy who's a new voice like that is a smart move.
Yeah, that's not crazy. I mean, sometimes it's just time. And I know the football team that I root for, the world champion Philadelphia Eagles, they had a situation.
Go Birds.
They had a situation similar to that a couple years ago when they had to let go Andy Reid. And a lot of people think that, you know, he gets a lot of stuff on Twitter and stuff for like mismanaging the clock, rightly so. But he's still a fine coach, and you know, a lot, he's going to be in the Hall of Fame one day, and he's a good coach. He wins games. a lot of people were just kind of sick of him in Philadelphia. And sometimes they do need a new voice, and sometimes I think they tune people out, the players do. And, you know, sometimes you just need a new guy, and that's just how it is.
I think over years, like, you know, people's negatives start to become a little louder. Like, you start to, like, notice him more because, like, you've seen him forever. It's like, oh, like with Andy Reid, like, after years, like, oh, man, this guy doesn't know how to use his timeouts kind of thing. With Joe Girardi, it's like, oh, he's so rigid and, like, only uses his bullpen a certain way and blah, blah, blah. It's like that kind of stuff becomes more evident the longer they're around. So I think managers will always have a shelf life.
Yeah.
Like, eventually, like, time just runs its course and you just need something else going on to freshen things up. Things get stale. The Office went off the air. All-time show.
Yeah.
And eventually it got stale and needed to go. Everything eventually runs its course. It's like like 10 years as a manager of any team is a long time to do anything. Like, it was just kind of time to move on. I mean, you just kind of needed somebody else calling the shots and saying what's important.
Well, listen, an Office reference is basically the only way I would ever want to end this podcast.
Exactly.
So that's delightful. And I appreciate you for bringing that heat to the show.
Yeah.
So anything else? I mean, any other parting shots? Anything you want to bring up here? Where do you see the team going? Where do you see at the end of the year? I know last year I was a little bit more bullish on the team than you were, but where are you now?
World Series champions.
So you're just going all in. Let's make it to the World Series.
Well, that's my undeniable fanboy spring attitude where, you know, hope springs eternal. I always think we're winning a World Series, but if I'm being honest, I mean, I really think that a run in with the Astros, is probably going to happen at some point. But, I mean, I think the first goal would just be to, like, finally win the AL East.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's do that first because I really want to win the division.
Exactly.
Really bad.
I can't. After today's Nesson broadcast and listening to them talk about how awful the Yankees are and how great the Red Sox are, I just want to be so bad.
We'll have our time. We will have our time.
Also, final parting shot, Karen over Pam.
Oh, man. We're not doing this again. We did this on our Carpool Karaoke podcast a couple of months ago. We're not doing the Cam. Well, I said Cam. The Karen-Pam situation. We're not doing that again. We're not doing it again.
We'll save for another time.
All right. So this has been great. This has been Kevin Drain from Rochester, New York. Live from Rochester, New York.
Back in the fold.
Back in the fold.
For the foreseeable future.
Back in the cut. I am Weston Blazy here in New York, New York, and I just watched the God's Plan video for the fourth time today. And
it's really incredible.
It still holds up.
Still holds up.
Still holds up, y'all. It's only been a couple weeks. It still holds up.
Also, for all the people out there, Big Daddy still holds up. All these years later.
Yeah, you know what? Here's what I'll do right now. If you can recite me the scene when Adam Sandler is talking to the kids in the park about Yoo-Hoo, I will name the episode after you. I will just call it the Kevin Drain episode.
So you say, what? Isn't it like, you guys like drinking Yoo-Hoo? It's good. You guys, you know what else is also good? Alcohol.
Huh? Poppin' the Sheba?
Poppin' the Sheba? What's that? You're a good man. Wait. What is he? I forget what he says. He's like something's like, he's a good man.
Rumpelstiltskin? So
Rumpelstiltskin. He's a good man. So are you.
close enough. All right. Well, this has been great. I will talk to you soon. Yeah, this has been a great episode of Podcast and Chill. This has been a great sode.
All right. See you, Jobin.
All right. Later, Lanish.